That was when I saw the figure of Ultragod, or Ultragod's imposter, settle down amongst the Darklight forces. He was an Olympian-proportioned African-American man in a skin-tight white and gold outfit, presumably, I couldn't tell over the black and white monitors, with a similarly colored golden cape flowing behind him. Otherworldly electricity moved through and around his body, circling his eyes especially. Unlike most superheroes, he wore no crests or symbols, but everyone in the world knew who he was. The false Ultragod had come here to help Darklight slaughter us all. Gabrielle narrowed her eyes.
I know what I'm going to be doing during this.
Good, I muttered, not at all wanting to tangle with a man so far out of my weight class it might as well have been Little Mac versus Mike Tyson.
Was he a boxer? Cloak asked.
Sort of, I explained. Much the same way Mario was a plumber. Gabrielle looked at me.
Are you ever going to be serious?
No, I said. Cindy broke off her hug with me.
I've got a secret tunnel underneath the hospital leading behind these guys. We'll take it and then ambush them on the other side.
Good idea, I said, sighing. We'll call in all of our crew to help. I can use some of the weak first-level magic I can do to send a message past the jammer technology they have here to our crew and get some reinforcements.
Don't sell yourself short, Gary. That's at least third-level magic, Cindy said, smiling.
I wanted to say something more, that I loved her, that I cherished her, and that Cindy was the closest person to my heart aside from Mandy. Even over Gabrielle, who would always be special to me, but would never know me the way Cindy did. I wanted to kiss her, honestly, and tell her that we'd figure this out, because it was possible to love two people. But I didn't want to betray my wife, either. So I kept silent. Unfortunately, the jackass outside didn't stay silent. The faux Ultragod levitated a few feet off the ground and crossed his arms like M. Bison, his cape fluttering in the wind behind him before he spoke in a voice that projected itself into the minds of everyone inside the hospital, myself included.
Feeble mortals, I, Ultra Devil, ruler of the antimatter universe of Trey, command you to come out and pay with your lives for the perfidy of challenging my right to rule this world. I have made an alliance with President Omega, and together we shall crush all the sub-beings of this reality. Your time to debate your surrender is up, and I am not so weak as to care for the lives of insects.
Ultra Devil raised his right hand and aimed it at a group of civilians trembling on the ground. One of them had a baby.
Oh, shit, I said, realizing what he was about to do and powerless to stop it.
I kept my eyes open, though, because atrocities like this deserved to be witnessed. Beside me, I felt a whooshing sensation, followed by a sudden empty feeling in my arms. Right as Gabrielle appeared in front of the blast, taking it against her costume and staring Ultra Devil down.
Halt, evildoer!
Gabrielle shouted at the top of her lungs. Ultra Goddess was back, and we had to make use of her distraction.
Ben 11, Cindy said, looking at the nurse. Take care of all the patients as best you can. See if they can be moved safely to the security ward. Anyone else, ask Melissa to teleport away. She likes to hide the fact she's a super from everyone else, but we could really use that right now.
And people think you're an awful doctor, Ben 11 said.
They what?
Cindy said.
Fuck them.
Dragging Cindy out of her office, I said. Come on, we need to get to that underground tunnel you mentioned.
I bet it was Rosemary Floral, a.k.a. the florist on Floor 7. She's always had it out for me. See if I ever screw her in a closet again.
Briefly distracted by that mental image, the florist being one of Maxim's top 10 hottest supervillains, Cindy was 7th on the list, I reluctantly shook it away. Gabrielle isn't going to be able to hold out against Ultra Devil long.
Why not? Isn't she always on about how she's more powerful than her dad?
Those cyborgs had Venusian anti-force cannons. I know because I used to date her, and every one of her villains had their henchmen armed with them. They'll sap her strength until she can't fight him anymore.
Damn it, Cindy said. I hate smart villains who aren't us.
You and me both. I started muttering a spell, invoking several Jewish spirits, before sending them to speak to my closest associates. Honestly, if I'd known religious studies could grant you magic, I would have paid more attention during my rabbi's lessons. Much to my surprise, Diablo Man responded by contacting me mentally. I sometimes forgot he knew magic, too.
Boss, are you there?
Yeah, just currently under siege by cyborg mercenary goons and Ultra God's mirror universe counterpart. Shouldn't he have a goatee?
I'll pretend any of that makes sense to me, Diablo Man said. I have transported your niece and sister to a cabin on an island in Lake Falconcrest. They should be safe from the President's forces.
Yeah, about that, I said. The president is an insane time-traveling despot from the future and killed Ultra God. He's also outside.
I see, Diablo Man said. Well, that would explain a few things. You need reinforcements.
Just a wee bit.
Then you are lucky I've been assembling a task force for just such an occasion, Diablo Man said. You can thank me with a bonus. Like the case of diamonds I gave you last night? Point taken. We shall be there in 10 minutes.
10 minutes may be too late!
I broke contact with him. Cindy and I headed down the stairs into the hospital basement. The place still had graffiti on the walls, and there was an unclean feeling in the air. No matter how much good Cindy had done in this place, it was still one where hundreds of people had been massacred by gangs and zombies both. Good didn't erase evil. But then again, maybe the reverse was true as well. Or neither mattered.
How can you say that, Gary? With everything President Omega and Ultra Devil are doing, what Gabrielle is doing to oppose them, good and evil are very real.
Omega isn't complex, I replied, gritting my teeth. He's a bully who gets his rocks off with petty displays of power. Ultra Devil is probably the same. There's nothing terribly complex about them. Most people aren't so single-minded and devoted, though. What's going to happen when the president is killed by a super? What will they demand as punishment? Who will have to pay the piper? Will it matter one way or the other that Omega was an asshole, or will they just string me up? I think we both know the answer. I'm not going to let that happen, though.
I see, Cloak said. You're thinking this through further than I thought.
Heroes and villains depend on who is telling the story, I said. I choose to reject that argument. I'm the villain because I do what I want and tell the rest of society to fuck off for it. I forgot that because Mandy died. I thought maybe if I'd had an ounce of forethought that she might still be alive. No, it's not. It's the fault of this reality and not being smart or hard enough to get what I want. In that respect, Omega and I aren't so different.
You two are nothing alike, Cloak insisted.
We'll see when I come down on the White House with a couple of pipe-hitting supers to go to work on Omega with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch. I intend to get medieval on his ass.
Down here,
Cindy said, gesturing to a janitor's closet door. Heading down inside it, Cindy pushed on a shelf, which caused a door to open to a dark, water-filled hallway. The interior of the hallway contained her red riding hood cloak and a picnic basket. Tossing off her doctor's smock, she put on both. She didn't have time to change into the bustier or dress, which was probably for the best.
Cindy, there's some things I should probably tell you.
Now is really not the time, Gary.
I took a deep breath. You've made my life incredibly fucking complicated, and I don't want you gone from it, ever. You also know I find you hot as hell. You're my best friend I want to have sex with. I'm not sure that qualifies as love, but it's probably close enough for government work.
Cindy turned around and looked at me.
Gary?
We didn't get to speak further because the end of the tunnel collapsed. Gabrielle smashed through the ceiling and created a crater around her. Ultra Devil proceeded to strike her with a gigantic Ultra Force Morning Star. Thankfully, the weapon didn't crush her outright as she knocked it away with an Ultra Force hand the size of a car, then conjured a bullet train which she smashed Ultra Devil in the face with.
I'm not sure we're going to be able to do much out there,
Cindy said, watching the battle between Titans as it spilled out onto the streets.
We have to try, I said.
Because we're heroes now?
Because Gabrielle is our friend, I said. Also because we hate the people outside.
Good, Cindy said, taking a deep breath. I'd hate to think we were getting soft.
Yeah.
Try not to get killed, Gary.
You too.
The two of us ran down the hall to join the battle. Chapter 14. The Big Epic Brawl That Gets Bigger. In what would be a surprise to many of my detractors, and quite a few of my supporters, I don't actually like hurting people. I was very good at it, I didn't particularly mind it, and I'd gotten a lot of practice at it in the past year, but it wasn't something I enjoyed. If someone were to cut me open and examine the reptile portions of my brain, they'd find I exist somewhere in the spectrum between is a killer when he needs to be and murder is the best solution to any problem. Knowing these facts about me, you should take note that when I said, I'm looking forward to killing each and every one of these bastards, I wasn't saying it on a whim. No, I was saying it because I was really looking forward to killing each and every one of these bastards.
The sight which greeted me and Cindy upon our emergence from the ruins of her tunnel was a bloody battlefield full of explosions, energy blasts, black helicopters, building-sized suits of power armor, armored cars, giant robots, and guys who looked like they'd come from a movie casting call for Space Nazis the Oppressing. Ultra Goddess and Ultra Devil were battling it over the hospital, but true to my predictions, the former was battling in a handicap thanks to everyone cherry-tapping her while she punched out the fake Ultra God's lights. Gabrielle was also forced to take a hit every time she had to get in the way of Ultra Devil firing his energy blasts at the hospital or the groups of civilians nearby. Given how powerful the Ultras were, the entire city was endangered by Ultra Devil's complete disrespect for any life but his own. One thing I should mention. Movies and television don't actually convey how frigging loud battles between superheroes and armies actually are. The amount of gunfire and worse going on made my ears ring just entering the battle. Plugging my ears with Shadow stuff, I conjured forth my Reaper's pistols and said to Cindy, "Okay, we just need to find cover and pick off as many targets as we can."
"What?"
Cindy shouted right beside me.
"Let's kill these bastards," I shouted back.
"No need to shout,"
Cindy said. Cindy reached into her picnic basket and pulled out a set of jacks and a rubber ball. They were slightly larger than normal, sized for adults to throw rather than small children, and shinier than the plastic ones I had played with as a kindergartner. Cindy proceeded to throw them all into the air. The jacks formed a cloud above Cindy's head, hovered, made beeping noises, and then zipped across the battlefield. A single jack attached itself to a dozen Darklight soldiers before exploding in a series of grenade-sized detonations. The rubber ball, by contrast, slammed into one of the mecha walking around and knocked the tank-sized machine over before smashing into a car and sending it into a roll before banging into a helicopter's cockpit and causing it to explode. I just looked at Cindy, stunned. Where the hell?
Toy Mistress made these for the hospital's Hanukkah charity drive. I told her these were probably unsafe for anyone under 11.
Probably. Unfortunately, Cindy's little opening shot had also gotten the attention of the rest of the paramilitary force surrounding us. Cindy slipped on a Star Knight's energy shield ring, which protected her from the initial barrage while I turned intangible.
"Okay, it's time to go John Woo on these guys' asses," I said, staring at all of them.
"Gary, have you ever even shot a gun before?"
Cindy asked. I looked at her.
"You know, just the once."
"Great,"
Cindy muttered.
"Death wouldn't steer me wrong."
"She's freaking Death!"
"Yeah, well."
I realized for the first time in my life I was out of funny rejoinders. I compromised by shouting out my battle cry.
"Witticism and clever comeback!"
"What?"
Cindy said. I charged out into the attacking goon squad, firing both guns randomly because I was pretty sure it would be just as effective as my aiming. Much to my surprise, as I pulled the trigger, I saw the bullets and energy beams of the Darklight soldiers slow down to an easily avoidable crawl. I then realized what Death had done for me.
"Bullet time, jackasses!"
I shouted, giving a whoop and firing dozens of shots while skipping over the attacks of my enemies. I even took time to aim at the mecha, giant robots and armored cars around me, since I hoped they would explode. After all, if we were running on movie logic, then we should have plenty of gratuitous explosions, right?
"Death is far too good to you," Cloak muttered. "All I ever got was vague threats and promises of damnation."
"You just don't know how to treat a lady," I said cheerfully.
That was when I felt I'd reached the sum total of all my magical energy reserves, and just like that, time reverted to normal. Which unfortunately had the effect of causing a pair of bullets to graze my shoulder and leg.
"Aw, come on!"
I said, falling to the ground.
"It's on a timer? Really?"
I didn't have much reason to complain, though, because my earlier thought about explosions was right. Dozens more Darklight soldiers fell backwards as my Hellfire bullets passed through their armor like it was paper. Even more so, the mechs and robots detonated like it was less a John Woo movie and more Michael Bay. Enough, really, that I was almost willing to forgive Bay for the Transformers movies. Almost. Unfortunately, all of that didn't mean a damn thing, as there was still a whole friggin' army of Darklighters surrounding us. Which was the purpose of an army, really, to make sure that no matter how good a fighter you were, you still got your ass kicked in the end. Worse, it looked like Gabrielle was starting to lose against Ultra Devil. He was hitting her with pretty powerful strikes, and she was only barely able to fend them off. My only consolation was half his face was horribly burned, and there were several bloody strikes on his costume from where Gabrielle had overwhelmed his protective aura. I managed to turn intangible, just barely able to hold myself in said state, as another round of blasts and gunfire headed my way. Looking over the wreckage and battlefield, I saw the bodies of the prisoners the Darklight mercenaries had taken. Despite Gabrielle's best efforts to protect the bystanders, the psychopaths had executed them during her brawl with Ultra Devil. President Omega had gotten himself a real set of headcases, which gave me the strength to continue fighting. Managing my output of necromantic power, which I never thought would be a concept I'd have to master, I levitated with my jumps to leap on the top of cars and mecha before firing down at the dark light soldiers below. The bullet time effect and my intangibility powers could be used at once, but only for a few seconds at a time given how draining they were. I conjured walls of fire and hid behind armored wreckage whenever possible, as they were some of the few things capable of withstanding their attacks. Contrary to what decades of cover-based shooters had taught me, it turned out that you needed really solid places to hide behind unless you wanted to be cut to ribbons. I had no idea what Cindy's state was, or if Gabrielle could keep fighting given the fact that we still had managed to take down even half of the Darklight soldiers. Struggling to get up, I found I couldn't. I managed to get barely an inch off the crushed car hood before collapsing back down on it. The pain was intense, but I couldn't draw from it to move. Worse, my magical reserves were not just really spent, but really most sincerely spent. I doubted I could conjure a candle with my mind, let alone continue fighting. But I had to, for Cindy's sake, for Gabby's, for everyone's. Unfortunately, while in most stories that would have given me the adrenaline rush to pull myself up, it seemed heroic willpower wasn't actually a cure for getting blown up, and I found myself unable to do a damn thing. I was a sitting duck for whatever psycho, cyborg, or head of state that decided to kill me. As much as I'd managed to fight my way around them, I didn't have the kind of skills that many other superheroes relentlessly train themselves to possess, and as much as my powers confused them, it didn't take long for one of the giant robots to fire a pair of rockets from its hands that blew up the armored truck I was standing on. I turned intangible just a wee bit too late, and the force of the explosion sent me spiraling through the air and slamming into the top of a Cadillac in the staff parking lot. If not for the fact that I was partially invulnerable, I would have been killed outright. But that didn't prevent me from feeling like I'd had 10 guys beat the hell out of me. I also had a couple of bullets lodged into my costume. It was also possible they'd buried themselves into the surface layer of my skin, and I'd have to pry them out with a screwdriver. Some of the magics I'd traded my extra power for had been protection spells woven into my skin, and while they didn't quite make me bulletproof, they certainly lowered my armor class a bit. Increased my armor class? Which was better? I couldn't remember which edition of Dungeons & Dragons real life worked on. Ah, crap, did I have a concussion? Because I wasn't quite sure what I was thinking anymore. My ears were ringing, and I could only vaguely hear the sounds of the battle outside. Kirk or Picard? Sisko. Luke or Han? Leia. The Expanse was the best thing the Sci-Fi Channel had shown in years. The 9th and 10th Doctors were awesome. 11 was okay, but loved the companions. Don't much care for 12. Okay, cool, still conscious and thinking clearly. Which was appropriate, since all 3-in-1 grabbed me off the car roof and then proceeded to slam me up against the ruined car's side. The figure assaulting me was a hulking cyborg with gigantic metal arms and legs, excessively large shoulder pads, ammo belts across his exaggerated chest, and literally dozens of guns strapped to every part of his body. He was in his mid-60s, biracial, with a cybernetic eyepiece that looked like the end of a microscope. I recognized the freakish-looking man as one of my first foes, something I found more than a little unsettling since I'd killed him and his team. "Captain Disaster?" I said, wondering if I'd hit my head harder than I thought. "That's Colonel Disaster now," Colonel Disaster growled. "How the fuck are you alive?" I said, wondering if it was just the good people who stayed dead in this world. "Nanomachine, son," Colonel Disaster shouted in my face like a drill sergeant. "They transferred the memories and personality of my team into clone bodies waiting for us back at Extreme HQ." I blinked, processing that. "Okay, that would mean you're not actually Captain Disaster, but his duplicate." "What's the difference?" "Well, for me, very little, but for Captain Disaster, it means he's still dead and you're walking around with his face and job." That was when Colonel Disaster slapped me across the face with his steel hand. It loosened some teeth.
You have no idea how long I've waited to avenge myself on you and your disgusting band of miscreants, Colonel Disaster said, sending spittle in my face as he frothed with rage. President Omega, God bless his soul, recreated the Extreme and re-empowered it to lead his Darklight Initiative for the glorious purpose of protecting humanity from the evils of supers. I decided not to argue with the cyborg about what constituted a super, and lifted both of my pistols, which seemed to cling to my hands when I wanted them, putting them right in front of Colonel Disaster's face before pulling their triggers. Nothing happened. Out of ammo? Colonel Disaster said, chuckling. Ain't that a shame? I caused the two weapons to disappear into the folds of my cloak. I was exhausted and couldn't put up any fight, but if I delayed even for a few seconds, maybe I could come up with something. I needed to keep this asshole talking. I don't need them to deal with the likes of a wannabe space marine like you. I was a marine, Colonel Disaster said, throwing me over his shoulder onto the parking lot in front of me. It was clear he wanted to beat the hell out of me before killing me, unnecessary as that was. My father thought I needed the experience to teach me some humility before I decided to follow in his footsteps and slaughter the mutated freaks of humanity. Sounds like a wonderful role model. He was! Colonel Disaster pulled out a gun with a sword on the top and held it by its barrel, possibly the dumbest thing I'd ever seen in my life. But all my time in the Corps taught me was that every pissant dictatorship, hellhole, and slum in this world is ruled by the guy with the biggest gun. You should have joined me, Karkovsky. We could have saved humanity. You get your powers from magic. You're still human, kind of. I stared at him, shaking my head. Please don't tell me you buy into the bullshit you spew. Colonel Disaster advanced, keeping his sword squarely aimed at me. Why not? It's evolution. Homo sapiens are the dominant species on this planet because we're the toughest, meanest, vilest sons of bitches there are. Homo eximus has every bit of our viciousness, intelligence, and strength with the addition of superpowers. Ditto thinking machines and aliens. We have to exterminate all three before they destroy us. He was almost in striking distance before I lifted a hand. Hold the fuck up. Colonel Disaster paused, raising his left eyebrow. Yes. I was probably going to die now, but some things needed to be said. Look, dumbass, that's not how evolution works. There's no straight line forward of bigger, stronger, meaner. Random mutations occur, and carriers who successfully procreate pass them on to the next generation. You know what the most successfully evolved organism in the world is? Bacteria. Why? Because it's still around and procreating after billions of years. Not because it's especially awesome. Humankind managed to survive because of its ability to socialize, build tools, and fuck its way through most of its problems. We're actually kind of squishy. Colonel Disaster started to speak. Not done yet, I said, interrupting him. The whole fear we're going to be eradicated by supers thing is even more stupid because supers are human beings. They just have a useful mutated ability. Being afraid of them replacing Homo sapiens is ridiculous because it's going to be our children that replaces the current generation. That's the destiny of all parents. God, assholes like you piss me off. The biggest fuck you to my people came from a guy who didn't understand Aryan meant from India. Oh, I didn't know you were Jewish. You don't look. Which would mean the Romani part of the so-called master race. Ugh, I'm so glad I have a time machine so I can keep killing Hitler over and over again. Hold on. I'm up to 36. It's the only therapy after Mandy's death that worked. Are you done? Colonel Disaster said, surprising me by letting me finish. Because I'd really like to kill you now. I thought if there was anything else to say. I still hadn't gained back any of my magical strength. No, that was about it. Time to die. Colonel Disaster moved his hand away from the barrel and onto the gun's grip before aiming it at my head. He fired. Chapter 15, Where the Cavalry, of sorts, arrives. Closing my eyes, I briefly wondered what sort of awful punishments lay in store for me once I ended up in the hands of death. I didn't believe in the devil per se, since I was of the Samael is God's hatchet man inclination, but my boss wasn't exactly the forgiving type. A second later, I realized I wasn't dead and opened my eyes. That was when I saw the bullet stop in midair, spinning as Colonel Disaster looked confused.
Blinking, I looked to the side and saw a breathtakingly beautiful raven-haired woman with ivory skin and a sexy witch's costume that clung to her rather generous curves, propped up by a corset. Selena Darkchild, a.k.a. the Black Witch. My wife's ex-girlfriend. "Hello, Gary," Selena said, waving her hand in a circle at the bullet's general direction. "Diablo Man said you might be in trouble."
"Oh, no," I said, looking back at Colonel Disaster. "I've got this covered. Don't worry about me."
"You sure?" Selena said. "Because I can let it go."
"Whore!"
Colonel Disaster growled, pointing his gun at her head and firing a half-dozen bullets at her. All of them stopped in midair. I, meanwhile, moved out of the way of the current bullet in front of me before it resumed its natural course and plowed into the ground behind me.
"Why does everyone always insult my sexuality? Is it because of the way I dress?"
Selena said, making a tisk-tisk noise. "I like the way it makes me feel, and that really shouldn't be any of your business."
"Rawr!"
Colonel Disaster pulled out an electrified Bowie knife before charging at her. Selena proceeded to flip the car he'd held me up against and landed on his face. It didn't kill Colonel Disaster. Cyborgs were tough like that. It did, however, slow him down and give me enough time to recover a smidgen of my former power.
"Thanks, Selena. I take back roughly half of the horrible things I've ever said about you."
"I, in turn, intend to lord this over you for the rest of your natural life."
Selena smiled. "It's good to see you."
"You too."
Freezing Colonel Disaster's arms against the ground, because, honestly, I didn't want to kill the guy, I decided I needed to return to the battle. The thought of Cindy being hurt was enough to make me feel sick, horrified, and worried beyond measure.
"Why do you think she's out there fighting?" Cloak said. "She's there to try and protect you."
I'd never thought of it like that. Picking myself off the ground, I stepped forward before falling to one knee, then getting up anyway. The number of explosions and bullet noises had decreased dramatically. Looking to the sky, I saw Gabrielle smash Ultra Devil with an uppercut before the diabolical doppelganger fled through a wormhole. Gabrielle looked exhausted, but had proven once more that she was more powerful than Ultra God. Selena helped me stand up and walked me toward the ruins of the battlefield, where the remains of the Darklight troopers had been handily mopped up. Getting a look at the cavalry that had shown up, I wasn't surprised why. There was the Shadow Seven's other four members, General Venom, the Human Tank, the Red Schoolgirl, and Bronze Medalist. Night Girl was present, having joined the fight with non-lethal weapons as well as EMP grenades. Much to my surprise, my less-than-favorite person in the world, Adonis, had chosen to come with a winged 18-year-old man I recognized as the superhero Icarus. There were even a few supervillains I occasionally worked with who didn't consider me a category traitor. Nikki Tesla, the florist, who had been upstairs at the hospital after all, and my newly recruited henchman, the Fruit Bat. Gabrielle's boyfriend, the Golden Scarab, was there too, and looking every bit like a white and gold Power Ranger. Diablo Man was wearing power armor retrieved from one of our earlier capers, which gave the already super-strong villain even more enhanced strength, immunity to most weapons, and a built-in proton axe. His armor was painted with hellfire motifs, and his mask was shaped like a demon's. I couldn't help but wonder if he'd taken to wearing the outfit because toy makers were insisting because his old action figures weren't selling.
"Wow, this is some group," I said, looking around for Cindy.
That was when I heard Cindy cough, and my attention immediately darted to her. Cindy was crawling out from beneath the ruined remains of two mecha that had been smashed together, holding her bloody fire axe. Apparently, it had an ability to switch off its safety, as there were signs she'd gone axe-happy on several Darklight troopers nearby. Cindy put down the axe and brushed off her cape.
"Okay, which of you assholes smashed the mecha into each other without looking to see if a hot girl was between them? I know it's not any of the straight men or Black Witch. Come on, who's at fault?"
Bronze Medalist coughed.
"To be fair, really, you were kind of unnoticeable in all of the chaos."
"I'm always noticeable," Cindy snapped. "I'm ridiculously awesome."
That was when I wrapped my arms around Cindy and gave her a tight hug.
"You'd had better be if we are to overthrow the President of the United States and his army of misguided superheroes," Diablo Man said.
"Then this group really isn't big enough," I said. "I don't suppose you know where we can get an inexhaustible source of super robots."
"Actually, yes, but I'm hoping we can avoid casualties in the millions," Diablo Man said.
Then I saw Mandy. She was crouched behind the others, blocking the sunlight from her face with a hoodie, and her leather coat hiked up above her shoulders. Yet it was unmistakable. Mandy, the vampire who had been my wife, had come to help me. I wasn't sure how to react.
Okay, this is awkward on multiple levels. Nice, but awkward.
Cindy looked up into the sky.
Oh, hey, Altar Goddess, you're alive, which is good because we came out here to help prevent you from dying.
Gabrielle descended from the sky, looking down at Cindy and me with a sad look on her face before facing the others. I appreciate all you guys have done for me. Certainly I now know who the face of my enemy is. I didn't want you all involved, though, because of how dangerous this is going to be.
Yes, because the first thing any superhero is going to be intimidated by is the prospect of danger, the Golden Scarab said. Also, it's a wonderful thing to be kept in the dark about the president planning to murder your loved ones with his army of killbots and Nazi cyborgs. That will certainly protect us.
I was starting to like this guy.
Well, in my brief conversation with President Omega, it seems pretty clear he's taking his final days in office advice from Caligula. If we're going to stop this guy, it's got to be soon, because it's not going to take long for him to spin this into something that even further paints us as bad guys.
Surely the Society of Superheroes can't be that stupid, Bronze Medalist said. They'll have to know how dangerous President Omega is after all this mayhem, and if you stop to explain things.
Gabrielle shook her head, looking among us all.
Now that I know who the imposter Ultra God is, it all makes sense. Ultra Devil has Ultra Mesmerism the same way I and my father do. It's the ultimate power of suggestion, and if he's able to plausibly frame his ideas to the Society of Superheroes, like, say, that I'm the villain and he's the hero, then he's very likely got them eating out of his hand. We might be able to break that control, but it's very likely we'll be running into trouble with them soon.
Wait, you never used that on us, right?
Bronze Medalist said.
No, the Black Witch said. We're her friends. She'd never betray us like that.
No, of course not, I muttered,
remembering when she wiped my memory of her secret identity and our relationship when I was her fiancé.
There's more going on than you know,
Mandy said, still clinging to the almost non-existent shadows of the noonday sun. I need to talk to you and Gary alone.
Like hell you do, Vampirella, Cindy snapped. Go find a teenager to sparkle on and stay away from the man you've already ruined the life of.
Okay, first of all, my life isn't exactly ruined, I said, breaking away from my hug. Second, I think we can safely let go of the Twilight jokes.
Fuck that, Cindy said. I've still got a bunch of things to say to Carmilla over here.
Hey,
Selena said.
Carmilla is a feminist icon.
Carmilla is a serial killer of women,
Night Girl said.
What are you talking about?
Well, technically,
the Golden Scarab started talking about the historical origins and subtext of the character. Gabrielle then conjured an ultra-force starter pistol and fired it in the air.
Guys, we have to decide what our next move is, and now.
I think, against all my better judgment, it's best if we go directly after President Omega. There's no telling just how far he's prepared to go.
I know, Mandy said, which is what I'm trying to tell you.
Diablo Man, however, talked over. Señorita Anders, we must strike at these monsters directly, but let it be those of us who are already monsters in the eyes of the public.
I don't let other people take the fall for my actions, Gabrielle said.
Good or bad?
Mandy started growling.
Okay, I think we should listen to Vamp Mandy, I said.
Vamp Mandy?
Cindy echoed.
Well, I don't want to call her Mandy Mandy, I said.
How about just Bloodsucking Murder Skank?
Cindy said.
That's a good name.
I honestly didn't know how to respond to that. Gabrielle waved her hand.
Everyone be quiet. What are you trying to tell us, Mandy? You can be honest with all of us, not just me and Gary.
It's too late, Mandy said. The others are coming. I just have to get Gary to safety now.
What?
Gabrielle said, confused. Unfortunately, we got our answer when a 20-yard-long teleportation rift appeared 30 feet away. President Omega's voice carried through the air from the rift.
I would have loved to have teleported a nuclear bomb into the city, killed 10 million people, and then blamed it all on supers. But I've got something better planned. So instead, I'm going to introduce you to some of my new friends. Enjoy.
What an asshole, Cindy muttered.
I heard that, Omega said. Just for that, I'm totally mind-controlling the United States to think pale red-headed girls are ugly.
I'd like to see you try,
Cindy shouted back, then turned to me.
Wait, he can't do that, can he?
I shrugged. Maybe it's dark-haired bronze girl's turn.
They're already hot, Cindy said. Look at the Hawaiian Huntress.
We didn't have time to discuss Cindy's bizarre digression into looks when a small army of anti-heroes stepped through the rift.
Some of them I recognized as people I'd killed, resurrected by Omega's technology like Colonel Disaster, but others were some of the worst heroes of all time. People who had been touted by a bloodthirsty populace during the 90s and early 2000s as the answer to supervillain crime, only to inflict massive collateral damage and display a disgusting lack of every virtue that made superheroes great. There was the third Reich-themed armored soldier Iron Cross, the swimsuit-wearing katana-wielding ninjas, the wild-haired, bloody-jawed, blood-screamed the retributive, the chain-smoking, magnetically-powered Jane Union, Soul Flare, the living ghost which kills, a group of gun-wielding ex-Tomorrow Society teen heroes whom I only vaguely recognized. Homicide, the serial killer, the Black Scarab, Ares, Bloodwalker, and a guy who suspiciously resembled me in an all-white version of the Reaper's cloak.
"Great Caesar's ghost!" Adonis said, staring at them. "They've restored the extreme!"
"And worse," Icarus said.
"Come, my Arominos, we must put an end to this band of miscreants!"
Icarus looked embarrassed. "Could you not call me that in public?" Before the rift closed, Omega gave some parting words.
"Now, I fully don't expect my guys to win, but I do think they'll slow you all down for the real heroes to arrive to arrest you all for the collateral damage. I've got a lovely little set of cells for you all lined up in an antimatter universe. I call it Omega Tonimo Bay because, well, I was trying to make a pun and gave up after about 10 minutes.
Battle was joined before he finished his little spiel. Everyone fighting but me. Not that I didn't want to. But Cloak gave voice to what I was already feeling as I turned insubstantial and found cover.
"We can't allow ourselves to be distracted by this pointless brawl, Gary. President Omega is just trying to slow us down to further consolidate his position against us and prevent him from stopping his greater plans, whatever they may be."
"Brilliant case of detective work," I said. "What with him having said all that not 5 seconds ago.
Sorry, but it's been a while since we've dealt with villains willing to share their plans openly. I'm a bit out of practice."
"I'd say it's stupid of him, but given Omega has been consistently kicking our asses, I can't really fault his methods."
Soul Flare, who looked like an empty black-and-white superhero costume that distorted in bizarre and horrific directions, proceeded to descend on my position. His voice was an unearthly hissing wail.
"I sense the blood of the guilty and not so innocent on you. I will devour your spirit and use it to—"
I stuck my hand between the folds of the ghost's costume and sent him on to the afterlife with a blast of magical flame. Reality seemed to shake as a scream and thunder echoed from whatever distant dimension swallowed him up. Screams and wails followed before the echoes stopped.
"I'm guessing that wasn't heaven," I said, looking over my shoulder at the massive supervillain brawl tearing up the streets around me.
"Seriously, you'd think a ghost would know better than to attack the guy Death sends to do her dirty work."
"I never liked Soul Flayer. He and his gang of ruffians always seemed more interested in punishing the so-called guilty more than protecting the innocent."
"Ah, you're just noticing this now?" I snapped.
"The society made many compromises with heroes we perhaps shouldn't have. Law and order became more important than mercy."
Cloak's epiphany speech was interrupted by Ninjas slamming against the side of the spot where I was located as Mandy plopped herself in front of me.
"Okay, Gary, our last conversation didn't exactly go very well."
"You think?"
I snapped.
"Come with me if you want to live," Mandy said.
"Wait, what?"
Mandy growled, baring her fangs.
"It's a Terminator reference."
"I know that."
"Gary, I won't let you die,"
Mandy said, grabbing my arm. There was none of the viciousness that had been there last night. Instead, she was acting almost human.
"Not again."
"What?"
I reluctantly turned tangible and took it. Then I saw Colonel Disaster come up behind her with his rifle and fire into us both. The bullets passed through her vampire form. One of them went right into my chest and out the other side. I fell back against the ground, bleeding out and falling into oblivion. Crap.
Chapter 16. My last conversation with Dad. Nothing funny here. As I bled out on the street, I dreamt of the night my father had his heart attack. It was strange the places your mind went when you were dying, but since it happened so often, I'd learned to just go with it. Besides, this was a memory appropriate to the situation. It was a memory about coming to terms with death. I was really bad at that.
My parents and I had never really repaired our relationship after my brother's death. Both of them agreed, at least on some level, that Keith's supervillain lifestyle had led him to his death, while I lionized him as a martyr who could do no wrong. By the time I was 18, I didn't want anything to do with them, and they went back to New Angeles. I paid my way through college with student loans and two jobs, later working as Dr. Tooley's research assistant. Mandy eventually convinced me to make a token effort at reconciliation, though we'd never really breached the rift over Keith. Then they'd recognized me on television as merciless. Oy. This would be the third conversation I'd had with them since. I was presently standing in the hallway of the Falcon Crest City Hospital cardiac wing, getting berated by my short, blonde, 63-year-old mother, who was wearing a pink sweatshirt and long plaid dress. My bald, 64-year-old father was sitting in the hospital bed in his room, 12 feet to my left, looking horribly embarrassed. "You're a disgrace, Gary," Linda Karkovsky said, staring at me through her red glasses. "I didn't raise you to be a criminal, and here you are, making a mockery of our family name. Is it not enough that we had to endure your brother's ways? You had to do it to us, too." I looked at her, trying to keep my temper. "Yes, because your family name is so much more damned important than my brother, your son." "Why?" Linda shook her hands as if wanting to strangle me. "You had a good life. You had a wife, even if she was that way, and a job. You could have been somebody, and now you're this." I narrowed my eyes. "That way?" "No wonder she left you. I would have too," Linda said, practically spitting in my face. I took a moment to mentally count to 10. "Can I see my father?"
"We don't."
"Come on in, Gary," Joel Karkovsky said, sighing. "Linda, go get some ice."
"I don't need any."
Linda trailed off before shooting my father a look, then shaking her head.
"I don't believe this."
She then stomped off. I walked into my father's room. A nurse was checking his vitals. She looked like she would rather be anywhere in the world than here. I just let her finish her business and watched her rush out the door. Joel watched her too, seemingly amused by her reaction to his son, the terrifying supervillain in a black hoodie. I suspected the hospital had called security, who had probably called the police, who were probably calling on someone higher up. That gave me plenty of time to have my conversation with my dad before moving on. In retrospect, I should have just come after visiting hours when my mother wasn't shouting my identity to the four winds. Joel looked at me. "Well, I may have been forced to skip Monday night football tonight, but at least I got dinner and a show." He looked down at the plate of Jell-O in front of him. "Such as it is." "Sorry," I said, looking over at several bouquets of flowers nearby. One set was from my sister, Carrie, another was from my niece, Lisa, a couple were from co-workers, and a final was from the Silver Lightning. The Silver Lightning had been my brother's arch-nemesis for years, but had watched out for the family after his death. "That's nice of John Volt," Joel said. "He's an okay guy for one of those people." I sighed. "Those people?" I assumed he, like my mother, meant John Volt's divergent sexuality. My mother had never accepted Mandy's bisexuality, or her Wiccan faith, or being a Gentile, or being married to me, at least until she was gone. "A hippie," Joel said, growling. "Those damn Volts are nothing but a bunch of pot-smoking, super-powered peacenik tree-huggers." Joel smiled, letting me know he was joking. I smiled back. "It's good to see you're alive." "Eh, for now," Joel said more seriously. "I made my peace with God in Vietnam, too, fighting those damn phantom pseudo-Nazis with the Foundation for World Harmony. Every day since getting back has been a blessing." I sighed, walking over and taking a seat across from him. "I'm sorry for disappointing you." "Unlike your mother, I'm reserving judgment until I've heard your side of the story," Joel said, sighing. "Your brother became a supervillain because he got kicked out of the Navy SEALs for a couple of blunts, plus the fact he was dead broke. He had bad friends who encouraged him to make stupid decisions." I clenched my fists, trying to hold back my anger. "That doesn't mean I didn't love him, Gary," Joel said, sighing. "What is family for if not to call you on your bullshit?" He had me there. "Okay, what do you want to know?" Joel stared at me. "Why be a supervillain? You could have been a hero." I shrugged. "I hate the entire superhero and supervillain dynamic, one side good, the other evil, and never the twain shall meet.
I guess I wanted to show my contempt for the world and exactly what I thought about it in a big and obvious way. Joel drank a bit of water from his paper cup. I saw you kill those extreme people on television. I frowned. I'm sorry you had to see that. They killed a lot of innocent people, Joel said, surprising me. Yeah, they did, I said. I also saw Ultra God arrest you a few minutes later, Joel said, shaking his head. Except you were free not a few weeks later without any warrants. The FBI and Foundation website say you're wanted, but you're not on any pursuit list. I kind of saved the world. People who agreed with the extremes' methods come in every few months to try and take me out, but otherwise I'm fairly low priority. I think Gabrielle is protecting me, too, which I didn't want. The fact that I'd killed dozens of supervillains, destroyed the majority of zombies in Falcon Crest City, and helped the city rebuild hadn't gone unnoticed. I was a multiple murderer and guilty of countless criminal offenses, but the country had degenerated to the point that no one cared as long as I kept my targets restricted to assholes. In that respect, I was not so different from Shoot 'em Up. Joel looked at me, shaking his head. So, Ultra Goddess is still sweet on you? I blinked. You knew she was Ultra Goddess? You didn't? Joel said, staring. I mean, her father was Ultra God in a hat and glasses. Then again, I still have my anti-hypnotism implant from the war. Your mom still thinks of her as that nice colored girl you let slip away. I rubbed my temples, wishing my parents were less racist. A lot less racist. Yeah, I suppose she did slip away. What happened to Mandy? Joel asked. Because I know that girl would never abandon you. I answered without thinking. She died. Your fault? Joel asked, plain and without malice. I was glad I could answer. No. She died because of the whole zombie plague thing. Mandy was a hero to the end. Good, Joel said, taking another sip. That should make it easier. Not really. Joel looked down. I'm sorry, son. No one in the world should have to outlive their spouse. Someone has to, but there's only one worse pain in the world. Yeah, I said, looking away from him. I thought when I became a supervillain, I'd have the opportunity to do whatever I wanted. I'd be able to change the world's rules to whatever I wanted them to be. For the past 7 months, I've been doing nothing but looking to find a way to bring her back. To spit in the face of reality and say I didn't have to deal with the consequences of my actions. With the consequences of life. That I could fix things the way I wanted them to be just by willing it hard enough. That's not being a supervillain, Gary. That's being God. I'm starting to get that. Are you going to keep doing it? Joel asked, not sounding condemnatory or angry, just curious. No, I answered him bluntly. It's not fun anymore, and I've done whatever good I can do as the bad guy in Falcon Crest City. It's finally out of the hole the Omega Corporation and the Brotherhood of Infamy dug for it. I also have no interest in being a drug dealer or pimp. I think people should be able to do what they want, but consent is a kind of negotiable concept to the majority of people involved in those businesses. Will your supervillain friends object to your leaving? Joel asked. That was always a problem for it. Some will, I said, shrugging. I'm not afraid of them. Maybe you should be, Joel said, finishing off his drink. Did I ever tell you why we moved to Falcon Crest City from New Angeles? You mean after Keith died? Did we move some other time? My father asked, looking at me like I was a moron. I stared at my dad. Really? You want to take me to task over grammar? Hey, you get your sarcasm from me. I always assumed you just wanted to get away from the media circus following Keith's death. Theodore Whitman, the aforementioned Shoot 'em Up, had lucked out by killing my brother and two other supervillains the day he died. It had been a perfect storm of timing, as not only was it a slow news day, but it had also followed a series of particularly heinous crimes by repeat offender supervillains. The media had embraced Theodore Whitman, as had his lawyers and the New Angeles PD, as a hero. The fact that Whitman was a cop had also gone a long way to getting him on their side as a man doing necessary vigilante justice. He had triggered hundreds of copycats, some successful and most not, who believed killing supervillains was the solution to them. It had taken massive collateral damage, supervillains deciding there was no reason not to kill superheroes or their families, and the general nihilistic scumbags the 90s anti-hero tended to attract to convince the public they'd made a mistake in embracing him. By then, he'd already been dead for a few years. killed by me at age 14. No, Joel said. It wasn't that, though I was pretty damn disgusted when reporters asked me whether or not I thought my son deserved it outside of Keith's funeral. It was because of the nefarious nine. I blinked. My brother's old gang? Why do you keep asking stupid questions? Yes, your brother's gang. Excuse me all to hell. The Nefarious Nine was a club, for lack of a better term, of supervillains who operated in the New Angeles area. They were primarily mid-card supervillains, no one exceptionally powerful, but no one particularly weak either, who preferred nonviolent crimes over the bloody messes some left behind. They were theatrical bank robbers, jewelry store thieves, technology bandits, and hold-up men. People died when they attempted to mess with a gang, but they avoided killing cops or civilians, at least until they took over Atlantis and hundreds died in the resulting civil war. That had been ugly. I remember him, I said. Most of the original crew is dead, retired, or in hiding. One turned into a hero around the time of their gender reassignment. I blame them for ruining your brother's career, Joel said, sighing. Keith was an adult, he made his choices, but he wanted to be somebody, and they convinced him the best path in life was to become a criminal. Your brother didn't want to be Stingray the underwater assassin when he died. He was trying to get out of the life. I know, I said, thinking back to my meeting with his spirit. He told me. How is he? Joel asked. My powers freaked out a lot of people, much the same as Carrie's. They didn't freak out my father. Happy? I said. Good, Joel said. The thing was, what I'm trying to tell you is when Shoot-'em-up killed your brother, the Nefarious Nine wanted to initiate you. Excuse me? Your brother struggled for money between prison stays, for both his daughter and his wife. Yet the moment he died, money came pouring in with an offer to send you to special schooling with Phantom or some weird cult of ninjas in the Himalayas. They saw in you a potential replacement 5 or 6 years down the road. I didn't want that for you, so I took you to Falcon Crest City and prayed they wouldn't care enough to follow. Joel paused. They didn't. I'd never heard any of this, and a part of me, I'm sorry to say, grew mad at my father. It had taken me until my mid-30s to become a supervillain because of a freak stroke of luck. As much as it had become a bitter pill, I'd yearned to be one from the time of my brother's death until I'd slipped the Reaper's cloak on for the first time. Knowing I could have had 10 more years of being a supervillain, even if it involved something as reprehensible as Phantom, filled me with a sense of missed opportunity. The rest of me knew exactly what my father had done. He'd given me a chance. A chance I'd squandered. I took a deep breath. Thank you. I mean that. You're welcome. I tried to choose my next words carefully. I'm sorry I've disappointed you, Dad. You haven't. Joel surprised me. You saved Falcon Crest City from zombies. You steal from real assholes. You also killed Magog, the biblical giant. You heard about that, huh? Also a bunch of other bad people. I'm not saying I approve of what you've done, but you were true to yourself. Be who you are, son, even if it's a villain. At the end of the day, you only have to answer to yourself and those you love. I stared at him. Would you be telling me any of this if you weren't worried about dying? No way in hell, Joel said. Your mother's waiting outside the day, ready to give you another earful. Give me a hug, Gary. All right, I said, doing so. See you soon. You bet. I was glad we had this conversation. I didn't believe for a second my father approved of my becoming a supervillain, but it allowed me a sense of peace with my life path. I couldn't just stop being a criminal, but I decided to redirect my efforts to those especially deserving, at least until I was ready to leave. Not as a hero, but as a better sort of bad guy. Because I didn't deserve to be a hero. I'd thrown that away by letting my wife die. My father passed away 2 days later. I remembered that as I found myself standing in an endless nothingness. It was the nothing beyond, the complete emptiness that existed beyond heaven, hell, and everything else past the physical universe. But what if he didn't have to? A voice spoke behind me. What if we could make all this better? It took me a second to realize that it was my voice speaking. Chapter 17. Talking to Myself. I turned around and looked into the face of my doppelganger.
I'd caught a glimpse of him for just a brief moment during the fight at the hospital, and hadn't really got a chance to appreciate what he looked like. The first thing that struck me about him was, oddly, the fact that he was much better looking than me. I'm an extremely handsome guy, don't get me wrong, but all of my features had completely smoothed out to a superhuman beauty similar to Adonis's. He had porcelain white skin, platinum white hair, and crystal blue eyes. The nose was nicely more Semitic than mine as well. My doppelganger was wearing a silken, brilliant white hooded cloak that seemed to shine with its own inner light. He wasn't wearing one of the Reaper's cloaks, but a magical reproduction, like the kind the Nightmaster wore during our final confrontation during the fall. It made me wonder what had happened to his version of cloak before I decided I didn't want to know. "Hello, Gary," my doppelganger said, standing in the middle of the endless void. "Hello, other Gary," I said, thinking up a name for him. "The last time I faced my exact duplicate in the middle of a big nothing didn't turn out so well." "Believe me, I know," other Gary said, extending his hand. "A pleasure to meet you. I am the pre-Great Cataclysm Gary." I, reluctantly, reached out and shook his hand. "Pre-Great Cataclysm?" Cloak, as always, was a source of information. "The Great Cataclysm," Cloak said, his voice low. "The greatest failure of the Society of Superheroes. A gigantic war against the great beasts and an endless army of demons summoned by Diablo Man. No one but the inner circle of the Society, Ultra God, Guinevere, and I remembered it. We weren't able to save reality, but we successfully rebooted it. We were told by the Cosmic Monitor there were other survivors, but..." "So you're a Gary from a previous universe," I said, uninterested in the details. "Got it." Other Gary smirked. "You're surprisingly accepting of this fact." "I've long since given up on logic and sanity." Other Gary chuckled. "That's probably for the best." I decided to ditch the faux pleasantness of this. "Why the hell are you working for Omega, you psychotic prick?" Other Gary was surprisingly forthcoming. "Because your universe sucks." "And how does working for President Looney Tunes help that?" "Perhaps I should clarify I don't work for him," Other Gary said, clasping his hands together. "He works for me." I paused. "Somehow I doubt he's the most stable subordinate. Also, the question still applies. Why?" Other Gary closed his eyes. "Perhaps it is better to show you." He snapped his fingers, and we were suddenly no longer surrounded by emptiness, but in the middle of downtown Falcon Crest City. It was unlike any time I'd ever seen the metropolis, though. It was beautiful, with shining skyscrapers, clean streets, and air that didn't choke your lungs. Gone were the dark and somber faces of a people traumatized by a zombie apocalypse. Instead was a sense of joy. Across the street from us was the Falcon Crest City Bank, the one blown up by the extreme during my second day out as Merciless. Here it was still intact and open for business. I was more than a little unnerved. "It looks like Atlas City." "It is 1966, Other Gary said, sighing. "The height of superheroism. Except in the pre-cataclysm world, we were already alive and adults. You were Ultra God's plucky cub reporter friend, or as to say, I was, and we were part of the teen heroes who helped the Society of Superheroes solve crimes." I paused. "Okay, that makes even less sense than time travel usually does. How the hell would I be born 3.5 decades earlier?" "Abandoning logic in the face of superhero-related events is a good policy for a reason," Other Gary said, giving a dismissive wave of his hand. "Keep watching." The alarm went off at the bank, and two of my old foes, the Ice Cream Man and Big Ben, ran out carrying bags of loot while their costumed henchmen dragged out a pair of hostages. I hadn't known either of them very long because, well, I'd killed them both. They were a pair of psychopaths who had their deaths coming. I saw that with full awareness of the hypocrisy. These two looked different from the ones I remembered, lacking some of the inherent viciousness and malice I remembered oozing off the originals. This Ice Cream Man, for example, was dressed in a paper hat and white suit with a pair of earmuffs and a heavy overcoat, while sporting a harmless freezing ray in his right hand. The one I'd known had filed down his teeth into shark-like incisors and cut off his own lips. Big Ben, by contrast, was a dwarf in a bowler hat and a Union Jack-themed suit carrying an umbrella. The henchmen were both wearing black-and-white prison jumpsuits with shoe polish around their eyes and berets. They looked like the kind of comical crooks that menaced Scrooge McDuck and his nephews. I did a double-take, though, when I saw the two hostages were a pair of sexy girls in bell-bottoms and tie-dye shirts. It was a teenaged Mandy and Cindy, both wearing headbands and ineffectually struggling.
"You're not going to get away with this," Mandy said without irony. "Merciful, the hero of mercy is going to save us." "Yeah, you rats are going to get what's coming to him," Cindy shouted. "Our boyfriend is going to whoop you."
"Is this supposed to convince me the world is better?" I asked, looking over to other Gary. "Because all this is showing is your world is completely sexist, also curiously devoid of swearing." "There's no shame in not being a fighter," other Gary said defensively. "Cindy is studying to be a doctor and Mandy an investigative journalist." "Mandy is a fighter, though," I said. "So is Cindy. Besides, the 60s had Emma Peel, not to mention there were plenty of female superheroes during this time as well. Guinevere, the Heroes of Tomorrow, and so on." "True," other Gary said. "Eventually Mandy was so sick of being kidnapped that she went to study with her people in the lost city of Shambhala."
"Her people?"
I said, doing a double-take after I realized he was referring to Mandy's Korean heritage.
"You mean Californians? Seriously, your defense is, it's not sexist because it's racist?"
Other Gary sighed. "Just watch." Seconds later, a glowing white-cloaked figure levitated down in front of them. It was a younger version of Other Gary, who promptly pointed at the ne'er-do-wells and shouted, "Halt, evildoers!" "Got any popcorn?" I asked. Other Gary conjured